Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 1, The Activities of Maharaj Priyavrata, Text 16. Mukto pitavad bibriyat svadeham.
Mukto pitavad bibriyat svadeham.
Arabdamashnan abhimana shunya. Yathanubhutam pratyata nidra.
Yathanubhutam pratyata nidra.
King tvan yadehaya gunan vrinte. Translation. Even if one is liberated, he nevertheless accepts the body he has received according to his past karma. Without misconceptions, however, he regards his enjoyment and suffering due to that karma the way an awakened person regards a dream he had while sleeping. He thus remains steadfast and never works to achieve another material body under the influence of the three modes of material nature. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The difference between a liberated and conditioned soul is that the conditioned soul is under the concept of bodily life, whereas a liberated person knows that he is not the body but a spirit, different from the body. Priyavrata might have thought that although a conditioned soul is forced to act according to the laws of nature, why should he, who is far advanced in spiritual understanding, accept the same kind of bondage and impediments to spiritual advancement? To answer this doubt, Lord Brahma informed him that even those who are liberated do not resent accepting in the present body the results of their past activities. While sleeping, one dreams many unreal things. But when he awakens, he disregards them and makes progress in factual life. Similarly, a liberated person, one who has completely understood that he is not the body but a spirit soul, disregards past activities performed in ignorance and performs his present activities in such a way that they produce no reactions. This is described in the Bhagavad Gita 3.9. Yagyartha karmano nyetra lokoyam karma bandhana. If one performs activities for the satisfaction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Yajna Purusha, his work does not produce reactions, whereas karmis who act for themselves are bound by the reactions of their work. A liberated person, therefore, does not think about whatever he has ignorantly done in the past. Instead, he acts in such a way that he will not produce another body by fruitive activities. As clearly mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, Mamchayo vyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatityaitan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. One who engages in full devotional service, who does not fall down in any circumstance, at once transcends the modes of material nature and thus comes to the level of Brahman. Bhagavad Gita 14.26. Regardless of what we have done in our past lives, if we engage ourselves in unalloyed devotional service to the Lord in this life, we will always be situated in the Brahma-Bhuta, liberated state, free from reactions, and will not be obliged to accept another material body. Tyaktva Deham Purna Janma Naiti Mam Eti Sarjuna. Bhagavad Gita 4.9. After giving up the body, one who has acted in that way does not accept another material body, but instead goes back home, back to Godhead. Translation again. Even if one is liberated, he nevertheless accepts the body he has received according to his past karma. Without misconceptions, however, he regards his enjoyment and suffering due to that karma the way an awakened person regards a dream he had while sleeping. He thus remains steadfast and never works to achieve another material body under the influence of the three modes of material nature. We discussed earlier the idea that the body is a machine, like a vehicle, and the soul is the driver of the vehicle. The driver cannot significantly alter the construction of the vehicle, but he can decide how he wants to use the vehicle. If he wants to use it for sense gratification or for Krishna consciousness. If he understands that he is not the vehicle and that the vehicle actually belongs to Krishna and should be used in the service of Krishna, and he in fact uses the vehicle only in the service of Krishna, he's considered liberated. On the other hand, someone who identifies with the body is conditioned. Srila Prabhupada has given the example that one car can hit another car. And the owner of the car that was hit will jump out of the car and start to shout, "You hit me, you hit me." Why does he say, "You hit me"? The other car hit his car. It didn't hit him, but still he's crying, "You hit me, you hit me." Because he identifies with the car. A driver and another passenger may be in the car, the owner. And so when the car is hit, the owner is upset because he identifies with the car, but the passenger is not upset because he doesn't identify with it. So the pain that the so-called owner suffers is due to his false identification with the car. Otherwise, although the car has been hit, the car may be dented, but he wasn't hit. But he's affected because he identifies with the car. So the liberated soul, he has no false identification with the body. But he knows that he has gotten the body because of his past activities, and he has to live within that body for this lifetime. And he has to use it in the Lord's service as the body allows, according to the body's capacity and position. So the point is very important, because one might think that, yes, a conditioned soul, he has to act according to the guna and karma appropriate for the body but not a liberated soul. But here Lord Brahma says the opposite, that even liberated souls, they have to work within the limits of the body that they have achieved by their past activities. I remember when I joined, I had the naive idea that eventually by the practice of Krishna consciousness, I would be able to do anything. Means I would become expert at anything, that I would no longer be bound by the strengths and weaknesses of the body or the tendencies and propensities of the body. So I asked Srila Prabhupada that in the course of time, if I become the most expert manager and at the same time the most expert preacher, what should I do? And Srila Prabhupada replied, you should preach. Which is good, because in the course of time, I didn't become the most expert manager anyway, because I was born with a certain body and a certain mind. And it's in my power to use it in the service of the Lord, but it's not in my power to alter its capability in a way. In another way, a devotee can be empowered by Krishna to perform activities that are beyond his usual capacity. And that is, that's the Lord's mercy that he bestows upon the devotee eager to serve him. But being empowered by the Lord to preach or to serve doesn't mean that one's nature changes. One still has the same nature. But even then, one can in a way, one can overcome one's nature when the nature in a particular situation would go against the Lord's service. But that requires a lot of effort. In general, what we try to do and what Srila Prabhupada did with us mainly was to engage us in a way that our nature would be suited to our engagement. And that's what Lord Brahma is telling Priyavrata here, that, you know, that you could do both. You could do either. You could do both. But because of your past activities, you have this body. You're the son of Swayambhuva Manu. And along with the body, along with that birth, comes the responsibility to continue the governance of the universe, to take over the affairs of the universe. And even liberated souls accept whatever position is allotted to them by destiny, by their past activities. So sometimes devotees lament, oh, you know, if only I had a better birth, I would have had a better chance in Krishna consciousness. But actually, we should accept whatever birth we have gotten as a result of our past activities and just use our body to our capacity in the service of the Lord. And that makes us liberated. That's the definition of liberation. Iha yasya harer dasya karmana manasa gira. That anyone who engages the present body, means the by his activities, by his mind, and by his words, he is considered liberated even while living within the body. He doesn't identify with the body, but he uses all of his faculties in the service of the Lord. And he's considered liberated even while in the body. Now, the verse gives the example of a person who awakens from a dream. What I've described in terms of liberation is sort of the external description. But it doesn't exactly describe the internal state of consciousness in a specific way. In a general way it does, but not in a specific way. But the internal consciousness of the fully liberated soul is like the person who awakens from a dream. And here the liberation comes at the stage of Bhava Bhakti and is called Swarup Siddhi. Srila Prabhupada has given the example that when a person is asleep, he imagines he's someone else, he's doing this, he's doing that. So many imaginary identities and activities. But when he wakes up, he immediately remembers, oh, I'm so-and-so, such-and-such is my wife, and such is my work, and I have to get up, and I have to get dressed, and I have to have breakfast, and I have to go to work. He remembers everything about his actual identity when he wakes up from the dream. Although while he was dreaming, he was forgetful of his actual identity. So it's a gradual process in sadhana bhakti. We know we're not the body, and by following the process of sadhana bhakti, we become more and more, we identify more and more as the soul within the body, as the servant of the Supreme Soul. But we still don't, we still haven't awakened from the dream, in the sense that we still haven't awakened to our eternal identity in Krishna Lila. So that awakening, you know, takes place, in a more advanced stage. And when that awakening takes place, we know exactly who we are in the spiritual world. We know there's like 11 details. Ekadasa Bhav, our age, our dress, our service. We know all the details. Now, of course, the danger here is that someone could imagine himself or herself to be something that he or she is not. And that is the position of the Sahajiyas, that the Sahajiyas imagine that they're something in Krishna Lila, that they're not. There was one devotee who went to another Gaudiya Vaishnava. He was originally initiated by Srila Prabhupada, but he went to another Gaudiya Vaishnava. And his guru, new guru, told him that he was a peacock. And in Krishna Lila, he was a peacock. Not to be confused with our Lalita Krishna, but his name was Lalita Nanda. So as a joke, we devotees used to call him Lalita Peacock. And he would also sort of strut around like a proud peacock. So Srila Prabhupada very often warned us about the dangers of the so-called Siddha Pranali method. In the Siddha Pranali method, the guru will suggest to the disciple all these details about his or her eternal identity. And he'll give these 11 ideas. You know, your age is such and such, your parents are such and such, and your village is such and such, and your service is such and such in Krishna Lila. Now, there is such a system. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes about it, and previous authorities have written about it. But that takes place at a very advanced stage where the person is almost in bhava bhakti, in the advanced stage of asakti, which comes just before bhava bhakti. And of course, the spiritual master himself must be very advanced. But practically, that system is not appropriate now. Although Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote of it, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur did not recommend it. And Srila Prabhupada positively rejected it. But still, without any, you know, Ekadasa Bhav or Siddha Pranali, we can realize our eternal identity just by chanting the holy names of Krishna and making advancement in Krishna consciousness. And then it's just like a person waking up from a dream. He knows everything about his actual identity and service and so on. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has described the difference between the two processes, that in one case, I mean, I'll embellish it a little to make the story part more engaging, but suppose a Brahmin is traveling, and nightfall comes, and he needs a place to stay, and he needs to eat. So he comes across another Brahmin's house, and the Brahmin says that I have, you know, all the ingredients for you to cook in the kitchen. So if you'd like, you can go in the kitchen and use the fire and the cooking vessels and the food ingredients and prepare your meal. Or I myself have just finished my offering to my deity, so you can have the Mahaprasad. So in the first case, the guru gives the disciple all of the elements that the disciple needs. But the disciple has to put them all together. And in the second case, the guru just gives everything to the disciple. Now, here Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur is actually describing the difference between sadhana siddhi and kripa siddhi. In one case, the guru gives all the elements of sadhana, and the disciple uses the elements that the guru has given him. And in the second case, the guru just gives him the desired result. But there is, the same example can be applied to some extent to the sadhana of ekadasa, of siddha pranali, of the ekadasa bhavs, where the guru gives the disciple these different elements, you know, age, name, dress, you know, the village, and service, and so on. And in the other, the disciple just gets it all. And that just getting it all, that comes, you know, naturally by chanting the holy name and serving the spiritual master at the stage of revelation, which is bhava bhakti. So these examples that Srila Prabhupada gives, like the iron in fire, can be analyzed in relation to, you know, the different stages of devotional service. Srila Prabhupada has given the example that if you put an iron in fire, it will gradually become hotter and hotter until it becomes red hot. And then when it's red hot, it no longer acts as iron, but it acts as fire. And if it touches something, it will burn. So by chanting the holy name, or by putting ourselves in the fire of Krishna consciousness, we become, you know, more and more Krishnaized. And then when we're, you know, completely Krishnaized, then we no longer function materially, but we act spiritually. So that, you know, putting the iron in the fire and the iron getting hotter and hotter, that's sadhana bhakti. You know, ado shraddha tata sadhu sangha tata bhajana kriya. We get hotter and hotter, so to speak. But then when it's red hot, and it no longer acts as iron, but it acts as fire, that is bhava bhakti. And it's like fully, there's no difference. And that's also the definition of bhava bhakti that Rupa Goswami gives. That, forget the Sanskrit, Sanjananda Visheshatma. But the idea is that Shuddha Sattva completely, could say, pervades the person's body, or the body is Shuddha Sattva. It's not affected by the material modes, but it's Shuddha Sattva, the same as Krishna, the same as the spiritual world. Vasudeva, that's the stage of Vasudeva. And in the stage of Vasudev, one can carry Vasudev, Krishna, in one's heart. Because there, you know, the heart is fit. It's become completely spiritual. So Krishna and the entire spiritual world can be carried in the heart of someone who's come to the Vasudev platform of pure goodness. Just like Vasudev, the father of Krishna, carried Krishna in his heart and then transferred him to Devaki. So, I'm not even sure why I got into such an elaborate discussion of things that will happen automatically in due course without any artificial endeavor. But I guess the reason I did is because in some quarters, especially when you go to India and Vrindavan, these ideas are there in the air, and there are even camps of devotees who say that you need to do something more than what Srila Prabhupada told us to do if you really want to realize these higher stages. But actually it's not true at all. We can just keep chanting our 16 rounds and following the regulative principles and doing our best to spread the movement, and you know, we'll get everything. And sometimes people even ask Srila Prabhupada about how these details of their identity would be revealed to them. One Bengali man asked Srila Prabhupada at the end, towards the end of 1977 in Mayapur. And first Srila Prabhupada completely chastised him for even asking such a question. And then then after, you know, thoroughly chastising him for asking such a question that was, well, whatever. You know, Srila Prabhupada said, "I will personally come and I will give you, you know, everything you need to know." So, you know, we really have no need to worry about these things. And, you know, if someone tells us about them, you know, sort of advising us to do something different or something more, we can say we don't need to. Srila Prabhupada. And this goes back, as I hinted, to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. In fact, the Babaji's in Vrindavan, Babaji's at Radhakund, they criticized him. They said that his line was defective because they didn't have Siddha Pranali. I mean, this is actually, when you get into it, there's a lot of more details. The differences between our line and the Babaji's. But anyway, so they said that the line of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was not bona fide because it didn't have Siddha Pranali. So, Srila Prabhupada's, one of his godbrothers, Kinchana Krishna Das Babaji Maharaj, he said, we do have Siddha Pranali. That is, Chinada Pisuni, Chinada Tarada Pisahishina, Amanina, Amanidena, Kirtanya Sadaki. And that was very similar to Srila Prabhupada's, well, it was the same as Srila Prabhupada's reply to Professor Al Bihari Kapoor's question to him. Because, anyway, you know, in his Grihastha Ashram, Srila Prabhupada had been a pharmacist. He used to mix medicines. So Professor Kapoor asked Srila Prabhupada, you know so many formulas. Do you have the formula for developing love of Godhead, Krishna Prema? And Srila Prabhupada replied, yes, I do. And Professor Kapoor said, well, can you give it to me? Can you share it with me? Srila Prabhupada said, Shunada Pisi Niche Natarara Pisi Ishina Mani Na Mani Na Kirtaniya Sadhari. So that's our process. But that, you know, their temples, they recite that every morning. But that's, again, there's like a difference between like the theory and the realization. And even though we know the verse and recite it and quote it and preach it, but when it comes to our practical lives, we don't have that, you know, we may not always have that humility and tolerance. And therefore, we come into conflicts with each other. And then when we come into conflicts, we can't chant. You know, our minds are disturbed. Even if we try to chant, but we can't hear properly because our minds are disturbed. We're thinking about, you know, this one said that and that one did this. And we're not really in that humble and tolerant mood. But if we could be, that would be all we would need. And we could just chant and that's all we would need to do. That's all we need to do. And we'd be able to do it. So again, we're sort of liberated because we know we're not the body. We're trying to engage in service. But we're not completely liberated because that's not there. Amanina, amanidena. Wanting no respect for ourselves, ready to offer our respect to others. We do want to be respected. And maybe we don't want to offer respect to others. No. So the only solution is to keep chanting, trying. Sometimes devotees would ask His Holiness Radhanath Swami about how to become humble. And he would say, you have to act humble. Even if you don't feel humble in your heart, but you have to act the way someone who was humble would act. And you have to pray for it. And that, of course, is our general process. We make our own endeavor, we make our own effort, and at the same time we pray for the mercy of our superiors in the line. And he very much has the image of a sadhu, sort of like a traditional Indian sadhu. And I think our godbrother, His Holiness Sridhar Swami, asked him. And he said he had to work at it. It took practice. It wasn't always easy. But he made the effort, and after a while, it became natural. So the same with being humble. We make an effort. You know, we may not want to be the servant in a certain situation. We may actually want to be the master. We may not want to offer respect. We may want to get respect. You know, we may not want to tolerate, but we may want to, like, change everything around so it suits us, no matter what effect it might have on others. But we practice. You know, we practice. We practice serving devotees. We practice appreciating devotees. We practice glorifying them. We practice pushing them forward instead of pushing ourselves forward. Eventually, by trying, by chanting and praying, we'll actually feel that way, that yes, you're my Prabhu, I am your servant. Otherwise, like Srila Prabhupada said, sometimes say, oh Prabhu, can you bring my slippers? That's not the meaning of Prabhu. Prabhu means master. You're my master. I'm your servant. So it should not just be like with the mouth, but it should, you know, be assimilated as into our behavior and ultimately into our consciousness. Okay, thank you. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions or comments? Yes, Chaitanya Chandra. Very good. Chaitanya Chandra Prabhu says that in the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Narada Muni describes to Vyas how he got his spiritual body, that it was just like lightning. And he left his material body and got his spiritual body. And in the purports, Srila Prabhupada explains that one's spiritual existence is revealed by the mercy of the spiritual master in proportion to the disciple's service and surrender to the spiritual master. Very good. Even liberated souls are subject to the body that they have accepted. Now, the fact that the liberated soul does not identify with the body does not mean that the body is not subjected to the material laws. I mean, yes, it's true that that because he doesn't identify with the body, he doesn't feel pain in the same way as an ordinary person who does identify with the body. But still, if you pinch a liberated soul, he'll still feel pain. But he doesn't identify with it, and so he doesn't react in the same way. So, in the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, his most intimate disciples were very concerned about his physical well-being. Like Swarup Damodar Goswami is the most intimate associate of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but he was concerned that he not accept too many physical hardships. So I think that while acknowledging the spiritual master's exalted position as a pure devotee, we can still want to care for his physical needs, and in fact that's the duty of the disciple, to care for the physical needs and comforts of the spiritual master. And there are many verses how the disciple is blessed if he serves the spiritual master by ministering to his physical needs and comforts. Any other questions or comments?
It would be fair to say that the situation of going beyond awe and reverence, like saying this is the spiritual master, he knows everything, he's perfect, we should just defer to him. Is it maybe the situation of the two camps, would that be analogous to maybe going beyond awe and reverence into a more loving exchange?
Well, that was that was how I saw it. That was what I mentioned last night. That there was awe and reverence. With the spiritual master, there's always awe and reverence. Even with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they didn't forget that he was the Lord. They didn't forget that he was the Acharya. But although there was some awe and reverence, still there was a lot of affection. And with Srila Prabhupada also, it's not that anyone forgot that he was their spiritual master, that he was the world Acharya. But out of their affection for him, you know, they didn't want him to suffer. And out of their affection for him, they wanted to stay with him, wanted him to continue to be with them. And there is there was an earlier incident that foreshadowed the later pastime. In the earlier incident, which took place in May of 1977, Srila Prabhupada stopped drinking water. And he had actually said that his father, when his father wanted to leave his body, he stopped drinking water. Anyway, he stopped drinking water. And very innocently, Srila Prabhupada's servant Upendra said, Srila Prabhupada, you have to drink. He was trying to get him to drink. He said, Srila Prabhupada, you have to drink, otherwise you'll get dehydrated and it won't be good for you. And Srila Prabhupada said, call the GBC. Discuss. So it was, you know, obviously the issue wasn't just, you know, in a simple way for a healthy person, you know, should he drink at a particular moment or not. It was a larger issue. So then, you know, the senior devotees came. Srila Prabhupada said the GBC, but the senior devotees came and, you know, Srila Prabhupada said, you know, Upendra says I should drink. But the issue was about Prabhupada's staying or going. And all along, Srila Prabhupada had taken the position that whatever Krishna wants, he will do. If Krishna wants him to stay, he'll be happy to stay. If Krishna wants him to go, then he will go. So the devotees were sort of speaking in the same way, you know, whatever Krishna wants. And Srila Prabhupada completely stunned everyone when he said, Krishna has given me the choice, which seemed to be very different from everything he had said up until then. So then, you know, Srila Prabhupada said, I mean, there was more discussion, but basically said, so now you all go and discuss. So he went out of Prabhupada's room into the secretary's room, into the sort of entrance area. And Kirtananda Swami was very lucid. I mean, was very lucid. And he said that if Krishna has given Srila Prabhupada the choice, and now Srila Prabhupada is giving us the choice, then we should say that, you know, we want you to stay. And then one devotee said, well, all the GBC men aren't here. And then everyone else said, come on, who on the GBC is going to say that they don't want Prabhupada to stay? So anyway, then there was a discussion. But that was the essence. That was the essence. And then the devotees went back in the room, and Srila Prabhupada said, so you have discussed? Said, yes. And then, because Kirtananda Swami was the senior most, and because he'd been so clear in the discussion, so he was the one that was asked to speak. And so it was his time, and he couldn't speak. He just broke down. He was just sobbing like a baby. And then, you know, devotees were rubbing his back. And then he said, you know, if Krishna's given you the choice, and you're giving us the choice, then please stay. And then there was like a long pause, seemed like eternity. And then finally, in a very nonchalant way, almost yawning, Srila Prabhupada said, all right. And then he called for juice. And then all the devotees were elated. They were jubilant. So there was a background to the later incident about the going on the bullock cart, where Prabhupada had already, so to speak, given us permission to express our desire. And in fact, after the devotees had requested Srila Prabhupada to stay, and Srila Prabhupada agreed, Srila Prabhupada said, this is real love. So that was already there. So seeing the pastime of Srila Prabhupada's expressed desire to go on the bullock cart to Govardhan Hill in relation to the earlier incident, there are similarities. And considering that he had already sort of given us permission or encouraged us to express our desire, and considering that when the devotees had asked him to stay, he said that is real love, it was not inappropriate for the devotees later to express their desire that he should stay, because they could see, according to physical laws, what the effect of riding on the bullock cart would be. I think one of the reasons I was not clear where I stood at that time was because I was very naive about physical laws and the pure devotee. I was just very naive, you know, because the devotees that were in the mood of, you know, getting the bullock cart and arranging the pilgrimage, you know, they had asked Srila Prabhupada, and Srila Prabhupada said, you know, something like, you know, I'll recover by this journey, or I'll be cured by this journey. And so they, you know, I feel they were naive. They weren't wrong spiritually, but they were naive. You know, they thought, you know, Prabhupada said he'll be cured, you know. He's the spiritual master. He said he'll be cured. But the other devotees, who I feel were more mature in their understanding of how the physical body and physical laws work, even in relation to the pure devotee, they said, yeah, he'll be cured in the sense that he'll leave the physical body. That'll be the cure. You know, so I think maybe that was part of it. And then afterwards, you know, after Tamal Krishna Goswami and Bhavananda Maharaj came down, and Prabhupada said, so you request me not to go? He said, yes, Srila Prabhupada. And then afterwards, Prabhupada turned to Krishnadas Babaji Maharaj and said, just see how much they love me. So I think putting the two incidents together, Prabhupada took their expression of their desire that he remain with them and their desire that he not undertake a journey that they thought would cause him pain and could even be the incident that would lead to him leaving his body. He didn't take it as lack of respect, but he took it as affection, as love.
Once this same form, the Krishna can be raised about seeing the spiritual masters liberated beyond the influences of the molds and the lost material nature, and then at the same time seeing as a body which is affected by pain, by discomfort, by displeasure. So I think the position of seeing the position of the spiritual master makes it even greater. If you see that here the spiritual master who is going through all these pains and discomforts and these hardships in this world, at the same time he is forsaking his own personal interests and doing everything for the purpose of humanity and all the living entities for the good, makes his position even more exalted, rather than seeing that he is above the influence of the world.
Yes. I agree. You know, just to give a few more examples, just to understand the point that the physical body works, because that's actually the subject of the verse, that the physical body works according to physical laws, even in the case of liberated souls. There was one time in 1977, Srila Prabhupada was in his quarters upstairs in Juhu, and now Yogendra Swami brought in the plate of prasad late lunch, and Srila Prabhupada, no, he hadn't even brought it in, so Srila Prabhupada rang the bell and he said, you know, where's the prasad? He was very angry. Very, very, very angry. And then eventually Navayogendra Swami got the plate together and brought in the plate. And then afterwards Srila Prabhupada said, you know, that the body has to be regulated. Because at the time Prabhupada was already quite ill. And he said, you know, the body has to be regulated and it should have prasad at the same time every day. And then he said, so that was the one point. And then the other thing he said was that, you know, I'm an old man and when you get old you become irritable. So, you know, Prabhupada didn't, he didn't present himself as if he was beyond the laws of material nature, like in terms of his digestion, for example. And just to give a little example, Srila Prabhupada had a friend in Bombay named Sadaji Whitlal. He was a good friend and a Hindu leader as well. And so he said to Srila Prabhupada that you pronounce Sanskrit with a Bengali accent. And Srila Prabhupada replied, well, what do you expect? I'm a Bengali. So there it's, you know, for whatever reason, he was born in Calcutta. He was born in a Bengali body and had a Bengali family, and he learned to pronounce words the way Bengalis do. And even after he had translated so many books from Sanskrit into English and quoted so many Sanskrit verses, but he still had the Bengali accent. But it doesn't mean he's not liberated, but it means that, you know, the body which he got sort of stayed the same, you know, like his English improved, you know, and his accent, after he was preaching in America for some time, his accent was less pronounced, but it was still there. And he even had a slight, some devotees have noticed that he had a slight Scottish accent, which may be because he was educated at the Scottish Teachers College. So he learned English from Scotsmen, so he might have picked up a little Scottish accent. Doesn't mean he's not a pure devotee, doesn't mean he's not a qualified spiritual master. Yeah, the idea that the spiritual master is liberated and therefore he doesn't need anything, he doesn't feel anything, can lead to a sort of impersonal conclusion that I don't have to do anything, you know, for him because he doesn't need anything. But I don't think Lalita Krishna Prabhu was really making that argument. I think he was just putting it forward as a possibility for discussion. Nityananda Prabhu says that there's different grades of disciples, and there's like the letter of the law and the spirit of the law, and the second class disciple will fix on the letter of the law, but the first class disciple will understand the spirit of the instruction of the spiritual master. I'd heard it a little differently, but it's the same basic question. What I had heard was that with the third class disciple, the spiritual master will give an instruction, and the disciple, as Prabhupada explained it once, the disciple would say, "Yes, Srila Prabhupada." And then halfway down the stairs, he'll say, "What was it that Srila Prabhupada asked me to do?" And the second class, he'll get an order from the spiritual master and he'll execute it perfectly. And the first class, he'll know what the spiritual master wants even without the spiritual master asking. But still, the question is the same. How do you know whether your understanding of what the spiritual master wants is correct, or whether it's your own speculation? Well, in the process of advancement, you know, we should be very expert in executing the order of the spiritual master as he has stated it. That comes first. Then by the realization and mercy one gets from that service, one may be able to anticipate what the spiritual master would want even before he asks it, or even if he doesn't ask it. But still, it's a gradual process of advancement, so there may be a stage where we think that he would want something, but we're not sure. Or we think he would want something, but, or like, yeah, but we're not sure. So then how do we determine? Well, there's chanting and praying, and there's consulting, and there's even referring to books and words spoken previously. But I would say the one that Goswami Maharaj relied upon the most was consultation. But again, different devotees have different natures. Some are more intuitive, but he would always consult. If it was depending on the situation, it could be an individual or it could be a number of individuals separately, like when he was in England and couldn't easily call a group of God brothers together. Or when he was in India, or even in New York, he did it once when he was writing and living in that apartment in Lower Manhattan. Called the God brothers together to discuss in a group. So that's, in most cases, that's probably a good approach. That's very good. It's very good. It's also like Priyavrata. Narada Muni wanted him to avoid the distractions of family life and material affairs and to be detached. But even though by circumstances he had to accept the rule of the universe, but he still remembered Narada Muni's instructions to him. So yeah, Prabhupada. So it's the same thing, like externally, by circumstances, he was unable to go on the parikrama, but internally, he was able to go. That's very nice. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srila Prabhupada Anuga Bhaktavinde ki jai. Nitai Gaur Premanande. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.